How was your day?
Busy. Very busy.
It's been a very long time since we chatted last.
I know. We talked last night.
Last week's episode, we got a great response, right?
Yeah, a huge response and all that feedback, and we're putting it into a bucket and ignoring it forever. Just kidding. we're recording a lot of these ahead of my eventual vacation apocalypse journey over through the touristy parts of Europe, much to our Slovenian friends' dismay. I'll be there for 2 weeks, so we gotta just get a couple of these, you know, on the books, as they say, or whatever.
Under our belt.
Yes, the podcast belt. Podcast utility belt. It's a different podcast app on each iPhone that's strapped to the utility belt.
Oh, I was gonna go like Rust Belt, like the part of the country, not utility belt.
But podcasting is international, Dan.
Well, it's got to have an origin. My insinuated origin is that it comes from a part of the United States, not necessarily a pouch on Batman's belt.
Okay, so where would that be, this prime meridian of podcasting?
The Rust Belt is all kind of Midwesty.
But the Rust Belt has nothing to do with podcasting, so you would just like have just the Midwest
utility belt.
Well, no, but I described how you would put things on it that would hold podcasts. Like what you've described has nothing to do with. It's just a belt. Use the word belt for something.
You know, you can't just go with a metaphor, can you?
No, I can't. No, you gotta put some thought into these metaphors, Dan.
You know what? Ohio is in the Rust Belt. I am from Ohio, so I'm going with Rust Belt still.
But what does that have to do with podcasting?
This podcast is coming from me and you.
Okay. So right from your belt?
You're from Pennsylvania or whatever, right?
Well, I mean, I was born in Harrisburg.
You're from Maryland, right?
Well, I mean,
was that one of the unreleased episodes? I can't even remember at this point.
It doesn't matter. I briefly lived in Rockville, Maryland, but... Like, Dan. Oh, Dan. Okay. So, anyways, if you're just joining us now, why? I don't know. Dan is describing how podcasting originates in the Rust Belt, but not really geographically, just people who are from the Rust Belt. And you just go out into the world from there, like spores, you know, to the winds.
Well, it's like coffee. This is a single origin source, and this is a Rust Belt variety.
The Rust Belt is not a single origin.
Shush. It's a conglomerated, gathered origin.
Dan,
I think the heat's getting to me.
We need to work on your metaphors one of these days.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm not as good with the puns or anything. So metaphors are all I have.
Yes.
Don't take my metaphors away from me, Jim.
No, I wouldn't dream of it. I can only hope that one day you can share your metaphors with as many people in the Rust Belt as possible.
I mean, that really is the true American dream, isn't it? Sharing your metaphors with the whole Rust Belt.
Mm-hmm. Is that a metaphor?
No, that was literal.
Oh, so it wasn't a metaphor?
No.
Okay.
Good week. What day is it? Thursday. Week's almost over. We can't even do that.
No, it's not almost over if you're working the weekend.
I hear everybody's working for the weekend.
Dan.
It's a song. That was from the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what else happened in the 80s?
Roadhouse, apparently. I'd never seen this movie before. And then you're like, oh, we have to do it. Like all caps in the Slack room last night when I was like, we got to pick something because we have to watch it.
I said, OMG, Roadhouse is on Netflix, which, you know, I had only seen probably the first half of it ever. And again, only on television. So this was as much a surprise for me as it was for you, I think.
Yes, I was very much surprised. I had no idea what to expect when I went into it. And I still don't know what I saw when I stopped watching it.
You saw a cultural touchstone that has permeated pop culture for several decades now.
Okay.
It's been on Family Guy, so it must be relevant.
Okay. That terrible Bird is the Word thing has been a Family Guy too, so like culturally relevant.
It's a thing people know.
Okay, I'll give you that. I just have never seen this movie, and it was a bit of a surprise. I thought, and it just was kind of out there, really.
What was the most surprising part for you?
The most surprising part for me was the premise at the very beginning of it that someone has to hire a professional cooler and like court them and get them to agree to come to your bar so that you can clean up the place.
I mean, he's the best of the best, you know, so he really wants his club cleaned up.
And that people, that word travels so fast about them that coolers are so famous that even bar patrons are well informed about different things that coolers did.
Well, to be fair, those guys were bouncers themselves.
Well, not all of them. Some of the people just sort of worked there. Like that one lady who had sort of a raspy voice who was at the counter, and she knew who Dalton was, and she shows up for breakfast one time and then, I don't know, disappears for the rest of the film. Like, I don't know what that was about.
That was an odd one. She's been in a bunch of stuff, actually.
Yeah, no, I recognized her as a character actress that I've seen. There are a few like guest roles in here, like Tiny Ron makes a turn as a henchman who is apparently named Mountain, which I thought was a little on the nose. But unfortunately, he doesn't have
most of this movie is, I think.
Oh God, this movie is very on the nose,
like a fist.
And
so it was a bit of a metaphor there.
No, that's a simile because you said like.
Isn't a simile just like a metaphor?
No. Burn this podcast down. Burn the whole podcast belt down.
We'll burn it down like the auto parts shop next to the bar.
It's more exploded, really. I mean,
it did blow
down.
Up. It was a rather large explosion. I know he had like motor oil and stuff in there, but that was a rather large explosion.
Yeah, I would venture a guess that some other elements were introduced to the establishment in order to make it combust in such a manner. But you know, I'm no pyrologist or whatever.
A fireologist?
Sure.
I'm not entirely sure what to call it. Yeah, the $17 million. I imagine they spent a fair amount of that on explosions and what have you.
Yeah.
There were two pretty solid explosions and or fires, I guess.
Yeah. Do you know this was released in two different languages? English and Portuguese?
That's interesting.
Yeah. I wasn't really expecting that either. Michael came and did the score. And so... Because I had to go check, because I was like, wow, there's a lot of, like, really cheesy 80s action music that's, like, totally miscalibrated for the amount of action that's happening on the screen. So, like, they'll be, like, punching, like fisticuffs, but it's, like, light fisticuffs. It's, like, I don't know, like, William Shatner fighting a Gorn kind of fisticuffs, where it's just, like, sort of... just a punch that doesn't really like connect, and you see it not really connect, and then we cut away to some other punch that doesn't really connect, and
they're not all great. There's some pretty solid fighting in there, like where he grabs that guy's wrist with the knife and like smashes his head through like half the table.
Yeah, well, the ones where they definitely choreographed that you are going to be doing this and I'm going to be doing that, then those ones worked okay, in that they were pulled off, but it never really felt real to me, like any of the punching or the hitting or the fighting or the stabbing. It was more like dancing. Dirty dancing, if you will.
that was a different one, mm-hmm. where he also had hair that touched the back of his neck.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the hair in this movie. Pants. The hair in this movie. Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Ah, oh, so impressive. And Swayze's hair is, of course, front and center through this whole thing, and it's slightly different in every take, which I kind of I admire, really.
When he gets sweaty, it really sort of mats itself down, so he must use a whole lot of hairspray to keep that thing up.
Yeah, well, you know, humidity is really, you know, not great for that, so I'm sure that was a problem.
Yeah, I think this is probably in a relatively humid area too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be Jasper, Missouri.
Oh, is that what it was? I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know where they actually filmed it. I didn't bother to check because it seemed Missouri enough for me in that I don't want to go there. Oh, the Double Deuce scenes, which were all of the bar scenes that took place in that dirt field around the bar. That was Newell, California.
No, this is Santa Clarita.
Yeah. And then there's Reedley, California, and Kings River, California. So, not Missouri. So, that's interesting.
Somewhere in California, they found a creek to stage a farm and or rich person house on.
Well, that was the Kings River. It runs between the two residences. You got a barn on one side and a crazy mansion on the other side.
Barn goes one way and mansion goes the other.
Yeah, it was the mullet of river housing. I have no idea. And there
isn't that Clint Eastwood movie. So maybe they poached him from a nearby bar that wasn't like, you know, too far away. So maybe he's well known like in his like county or something. It's not necessarily like across state lines that he's known.
No, they at the beginning of the movie, he's in New York.
Oh, is this supposed to be New York?
Yes.
At the beginning?
Didn't you see the license plate on the car?
I did not. No, okay. The only thing I noticed in the opening scene there is that the band was the same band that was in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, I didn't notice that because I never saw that movie.
Ah, you're terrible at this.
Well, you know, it was like, here's a Quentin Tarantino movie, and it's about vampires, and I was like, nope.
It's actually pretty great. Pass. It's pretty great, actually. You should watch it.
Hard pass. So the...
You like science fiction-y type things.
Vampires aren't science fiction, really, like, at all.
Kinda.
It's not how that works. And so, anyway, the...
But George Clooney has short hair and like, a big neck tattoo.
The beginning of this film... we pick up with him being very serious about managing patrons in a bar who inexplicably carry knives with them sometimes. And you'll find that to be a recurring theme through the film. It's just like, wow, people carry a lot of knives. I didn't really think that would be a thing at bars, but there's a lot of that.
As a person who used to attend bars, I can attest that that is a thing.
Really? People just walking around with knives and they're just like, I mean, always wanted to fight you. I always wanted to take you down.
They're generally not like the large kind of like Crocodile Dundee style knives that show up later in the movie. But yes, people are usually stashing a knife somewhere in their pockets.
It's called a Bowie knife.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get brand specific.
Yes. Well, I know. I'm sure Ziggy Stardust doesn't see a penny of it. So, I don't know. Moving on.
Wait. Since I need some further education, was that a metaphor?
No, that was terrible wordplay. So,
and wordplay is not a metaphor.
No, it's just wordplay.
Is that anything like swordplay?
No, but it's more like no. Anyway, let's not play here. The stuff. The beginning of the film. It's just I was sort of trying to wrap my head around what he did and why that would be relevant, and I kept reading all of the credits that kept going on for like 5 minutes.
Did you notice that? Like, there's like a break in the middle of the credits, and then you're like 8 minutes into the movie, and the credits start rolling again. It's like, what is going on here?
Yeah, the screenplay and story credits are like when he's on his way to Jasper. I was like, what?
It's like the third scene.
It was like we've changed location like 3 times. Because we start off in the bar, and he breaks up that fight, and then there's that one old guy who's just watching the whole thing the whole entire time, very creepily. And then rather than propositioning him for sex, it turns out that he actually wanted him to like go with him to Jasper to clean up his bar that he runs.
Did you misread that one at first?
What do you mean?
You misread
what
he was there
for?
I just meant
the acting there. It was just kind of like, he's just sort of like leering as he's, you know, pouting and beating up people. Is like, why are you staring at this man? Like,
well,
it
doesn't really
understand.
Help his case in like the two or three instances where he goes, I know who you are. It's like, whoa, easy, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, okay, he says that also to Sam Elliott later, and it's just like, yeah. Are there like cooler trading cards? Like, what how do they know? Is there like a periodical, like Coolers Monthly, that comes out? Like, how do they
there's probably just like a bulletin board that they hang up above a water cooler.
Yeah. I'm Wade Garrett. I know who you are. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, first of all, he's Sam Elliott, so everyone knows who he is.
Yeah, well, in the beginning of the film, they do briefly mention the name Wade Garrett, and it's like, why didn't you get Wade Garrett to do it? And he's like, oh, he's too old. I want somebody young and virile. He doesn't say that. And then they he makes this arrangement.
It's not my type.
Yeah. Well, they make the arrangement, and he's like, I don't fly on planes. It's like, that's a weird character trait.
Yeah, they're unsafe.
Yeah, and
as he's stitching up his own shoulder.
Yeah.
And which, not a super great idea, I don't think.
No. It was sort of superfluous and not really required. He didn't even need to say that we're not thinking how hardcore he's taking a road trip from New York to Missouri.
No, but he's stitching himself up after getting stabbed with a pen and keeping his cool, because, you know.
Yeah, cooler. And he's going to go past all those Flying J's with the gift shops, and I'm sure he's going to break up some fights there on the way. Maybe Howard
Johnson.
That's
what he does. Anywhere he goes in, he just walks in and, like, puts one shoulder up against a post and watches what's going down and then just breaks stuff up.
Well, I like to think there's, like, an aura that he exudes where all of a sudden there are, like, fights that are always, like, 10 minutes away from him, and then, like, by the time he gets there, he can break it up.
Maybe he emits some sort of, like, high-pitched frequency, like a dog whistle that just makes everyone go crazy.
It just irritates them, agitates everyone.
Yeah, he sets him up accidentally, and then he knocks him down and or takes him outside.
Sure. So they have this weird thing of him driving down and arriving in Jasper and...
don't forget donating his old dummy car to that random guy sitting on the side of the road and then taking off in his fancy new Mercedes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I totally didn't understand what that scene was. I was like, did I miss something? Did he, like, take somebody's keys? And then later on, when he gets there in the Mercedes, I was like, okay, so I guess, like, he has this Mercedes now. Immediately, he buys another car. And I was just like, hold on a second. What does he need another car for? And then I was actually reading online because I was like, maybe I did miss something. And it turns out I didn't. He's just buying another car. So that way he has a dummy car that he drives around. And then he has his nice car that he keeps on the side to only use whenever he's driving to new jobs, apparently, because he doesn't like take it out
really
on the town.
Take it out on the road? No.
He just keeps it under a little car cover thing.
He's a pro, and he's working, and he knows that they're going to screw with his car, and probably whenever they see him driving around the town, they're going to do that too, so he's got his dummy car with spare tires in the trunk.
Yes.
It's smart. He's been through this ringer a couple times.
I don't understand why that is a thing, but
it just goes to show you that, you know, he's a professional. It's a job. It's not personal.
Yeah, well, that's probably why he's such a well-known cooler.
He's literally the only one who takes it professionally.
Yes. He's just like, everybody else would totally just drive around in a car, but not you. That's why you're the top one to get to come to Jasper, Mississippi to
That's why he makes
Missouri.
The big bucks. 500 yeah. bucks a night.
Plus
medical expenses.
Yeah. Well, you gotta have medical expenses covered when you're stabbed like every 5 minutes. So they have the scene of him entering the bar for the first time, and it turns out that perhaps the place is a bit unruly, and that the owner's previous help in maintaining the control of the establishment, a fleet of incompetent bouncers who are actually making everything worse, are mucking around with everything. There's a guy behind the bar, there's a band going, there are hookers, drug dealers, there's everything. And it's just like, what? I don't even understand how this place has enough people in it to do any business at all.
Well, they don't really. That's why it's a place where people don't really want to hang out.
He's going
out of business.
They keep saying that, but it's full of people when he shows up. Maybe none of them are buying anything, but I find that hard to believe when the bouncer is like forcing people to buy drinks whenever he walks by. So I don't understand. But you know, it could be because the bartender's stealing $150 worth of stuff underneath the table and every time when nobody's looking. But that's not really clear exactly. Anyway, turns out it's just full of unruly, horrible people all the time. Maybe it's property damage is where they're losing a lot of money or on cleanup bills.
Yeah, they probably broke, what, like 60 tables in this movie?
Oh, my God. They just break everything. It's just like broken glass everywhere, people flipping tables. There was that really weird scene where the the guy is just like, yeah, $20 and you can kiss her chest. And it's just like, what? Like,
that was incredibly peculiar. You know, obviously meant to be one of the, showing off one of the many seedy people in there doing seedy things. It's like a black market bar where you just come in and trade in your terrible goods or wares or what have you. But yeah, it's way over the top with the idiocy. But you know, I bet the only other guy in the town who's making a ton of money aside from Brad Wesley is the recycling guy. Just like broken glass, broken tables. Like, you know, he's got to be making a ton of money off that stuff.
If they have a recycling guy, something tells me there's somebody that just takes it to the junkyard.
Well, I mean, it's an area where you know, somebody could come in and make some bucks.
Yeah,
it's an untapped market.
They'll hire a professional recycler to come into town.
So walk in and lean up against the wall in his tight sort of like half turtleneck with his arms crossed and just kind of watch everything.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's so stupid. And he's just like, coffee. Just coffee. And so they go through this opening thing, and then he renders his verdict, and he's like, you do not have the temperament to work here, so you are gone, and then you are bad at this, and you need to change this thing you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And he gives people marching orders. And he's you know, like, my way or the highway is something he literally says in the film. So
at least he didn't say, if we do this, we do it my way.
Yeah, because that would have been bad. So they established...
Only doomed movies say things like that.
Yeah, this one was not doomed. Super critically panned. But it is a cult classic, as you can attest to. And I don't. Attest to, but they go through this little like meeting scene where he's like giving everybody their marching orders, and then he goes off to find his where he's gonna stay, and he rents a room from some guy who's a horse farmer who happens to live across the river from this really rich jerk who will come into play later on in the film. Who has a helicopter at one point, but then it is never seen again. Something tells me the helicopter rental costs too much. But he rents this very large apartment in the upper area of a converted barn. And we are introduced to the character of Emmett, who's played by Sunshine Parker, who has an amazing name, I have to say, because Sunshine Parker.
Name?
Yeah, that's his real name.
It's pretty spectacular. He also had a pretty spectacular beard, too.
Yeah. And, you know, he's an interesting person in that he kind of seems like a weird mountain man and has some curious turns of phrase and quirks and stuff. Like, he's like, I'm really suspicious of you because most people really mind the smell of this place. It's like, why are you even renting it then?
It's well, weird. You know, it's a room for rent. He doesn't really care that much. He's just looking for some company.
Yeah,
not that kind.
Yeah, with his jammies, his long johns.
He needs help lifting some of those bales of hay.
Yeah, that like trough thing that he pulls out of his truck. But we establish this, and we establish the helicopter landing with what's his face. He's like, oh, that rich guy is a real rich jerk over there. Which is important, and
he's just doing that to provoke me because he's a jerk.
Yeah,
that's noted by like the five different cutaways where he gets out of the helicopter and he's grinning at them from across the river.
Yeah, established here is of course that there's this guy who's not nice. Although the extent to which he's not nice is not really.
He's just a jerk with a helicopter.
Yeah, it's not really conveyed in this opening scene. It gets a little worse than this. And so we also go off to his errands that he's running to go to the auto store and get a new windshield. And
they broke his antenna, man. He had to get a new antenna for that car because it is just unacceptable.
Yes. And it's like, do you want to keep it running, Tad? And he's like, no, I'm going to pay as I go. And it's like, whatever. Like, I don't know why this is...
You know, he's a straight shooter. He doesn't take any nonsense from anyone. So he's gonna do things on his own terms.
Yeah, I understand that. I just mean like every time he says anything, it's just like the most serious thing ever. And it's just like
he looks you dead in the eyes with no grin on his face, and he doesn't blink, and he says what he's feeling. Yes or no, sir.
Yeah, it's because he's honest. do you believe that?
He said he's honest, so I believe him.
Yes. Well, you're not supposed to because Emmett doesn't believe him. Although Emmett turns out to be wrong, because he's honest. So,
although he's super confused as why is this guy living in my barn? He's got a nice Mercedes under this tarp.
Yep. Very suspicious.
Something up with this fella.
Those people who live across the street, live across the stream from mansions, with their horse barns, and so
you know he was there first. He was just a regular old Joe trying to raise some horses or something, and then this big old rich fella comes in and buys up all the land and flies his helicopter around scaring the horses.
Yeah, I reckon I ought to charge you something. How's $100 a day? Do you? Okay.
Something weird joke about the church. Something which was odd.
Yeah. It's like, I gotta take money, so or otherwise people think it's weird. And it's like, yes, I would think that is weird. Like, why would you just have somebody lodging in your barn for no reason and no money? We also get another turn at the bar, and we get the scene of the confrontation with, like, the bartender, and, like, he's embezzling, and the other guy's a jerk, and then he gets rid of both of them. And there's the weird scene where the bar owner is like, Swayze fires the guy, and the guy turns to the bar owner. He's like, "You really gonna let him fire me?" And the bar owner's like, "Yes, I'm going to let him fire you." And it's just
like he's a tough old guy, but he's spineless.
Yes, he's really not very effective at anything in this film, and his acting is subpar. And so they establish that the bartender and one of the other bouncers is out of there for having sex on his break. Just stay on your break
with potentially an underage girl because she did not have an identification for
it. Yeah, everything about it not good.
No, not so much.
No, very bad. So they're
right
all
down to the fact that the guy stripped completely naked in the storeroom back there.
Yeah, that doesn't seem sanitary.
No, not at all. I mean, I know they don't do a lot of food there, but still, like, you know, take it easy, guy.
Well, if they actually had a Roadhouse franchise, then they could, you know, serve food.
Hmm. Maybe in Texas?
Maybe, perhaps. Although Roadhouse, I think, is owned by Outback Steakhouse, which is based out of Tampa, Florida. as you're well aware, Tampa, Florida is just the best.
Yeah. They just opened up a Texas Roadhouse not too far from me. Well, you know, relatively speaking. I have never been to a Texas Roadhouse, but there's one here now.
Okay. Do they have a version of a blooming onion there?
Probably. I haven't really looked into it.
Mm.
It's IKEA adjacent.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I have some news.
What?
I think there might be multiple places named the Roadhouse. The Logan's Roadhouse, a Roadhouse Cafe, OriginalRoadhouseGrill.com, TexasRoadhouse.com. A lot of roadhouses.
A lot of roadhouses. Mm-hmm. It is a popular destination for...
Although, did you notice that no establishment in the film is named Roadhouse?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just the sort of colloquial term for these roadside bars that attract, you know, truckers, bikers, and terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Until you clean them up, and then, you know, it's just people looking to have a good time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's called Logan's Roadhouse. That's the one that Outback owns.
Mm.
Or is it Cody's Original Roadhouse? Anyway, there's a lot of roadhouses.
All the great roadhouses.
Oh, my God, really? Just yeah. All these roadhouses. Screw it.
You know, there's a lot of roads, and each one could use a house, I think.
Every road deserves a house.
Every road has a house.
Mm-hmm.
That's that one guy.
Yeah, with the thorns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, we got off into the weeds.
We're off the road. Yeah. We're into the weeds.
Yeah. So the establishment we have this scene where people are kicked out, and then he goes off to his house to read shirtless as he does under the moonlight. And across the water, there's a raging...
He has a degree in philosophy, so he likes to read.
Yeah. His degree in philosophy, which he's not super proud of. I don't know why they... Just another weird character trait they gave him. And then across the water, we see that there's a huge raging party. And there are a bunch of ladies running around. and then our not very nice old man comes along and he pinches the guy on the cheek and says, "Oh, isn't he cute?" And it's just like that really creeps me out.
It's party time, man. We're all gonna get in the pool and stuff.
Yuck. Yuck, 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 yuck. Yuck. Wesley, gross.
he's a creep.
Yeah. And so Swayze himself arches his eyebrows at this and then turns back to his book. And we go off to some other scenes of them prepping the bar some more and doing a bunch of nonsense stuff, and then the bartender comes back in, and he's gonna get his old job back, and there is a guy there with him, and then another rotund fellow, and they have a conversation, which of course results in potential stabbing again. And people go through windows, and there's a lot yeah. going on.
Brad Wesley controls the liquor that they serve, so he's going to get his job back, or else. And apparently the "or else" means being thrown through a plate glass window.
Doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. Also, if I were Brad Wesley, I probably would have instructed people to not really like resort to stabbing people, especially if they are, of course, not really trained in physical violence, like the person they're going against, the infamous cooler who came in from out of town. So it was pretty ridiculous. This scene is just sort of like laugh out loud hilarious, especially when, you know, 1 second they're like stabbing, but then the knife gets knocked out and the person gets kicked down, and then they get back up, but instead of picking up the knife, they just punch. And it's just like, okay, tactically unsound. And they have that brawl go on for a bit, and some of the other people come in and assist, and everything gets straightened out, and the bad guys go back to Wesley with their tails between their legs. Which is also a weird scene when they show back up and
he slaps him around and says some really kind of weird stuff to him.
Yeah, and there's that monster truck.
The monster truck is the best.
When I saw that, I was just like, is this important for something? But of course, you know, Chekhov's Law of Monster Trucks.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, we have to invoke Chekhov's Law of Monster Trucks because, you know, you don't put a gigantic, stupid monster truck on the mantle in the first act. Well, you don't put it on the mantle in general because those tires are huge. That'll tear your mantle right out, but...
That sounds painful.
You put it on the mantle in the first act, that's going to go through a Buick dealership in the third or second or wherever that was.
Okay. That was a Ford dealership.
Oh, was it?
Yes. Your favorite. Not
a fan.
Well, at one point earlier in the film, Wesley had been driving recklessly in his red, new at the time, convertible Mustang.
5.0 convertible Mustang, just swerving back and forth, singing along to that one song from Clue.
Yeah.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
It's a good jam.
Yeah. Oh, another thing I noticed when I was setting up to record, and I briefly shot you a message about this, is Jimmy Iovine is listed as the music supervisor in the credits for this.
Sure, so. Sure. He's, you know, also very culturally relevant, I should say.
Yes, because of Beats.
Beats and stuff.
Yeah, Beats and apples.
It's three things, I think. That's a reference that I don't get.
Yeah, Beats, apples, and beyond. It's the place you can go when you get your $20 coupon in the mail.
That sounds like the worst store you could possibly go to.
Wouldn't that be funny if they just turned it into some sort of like discount retail warehouse, and you like go in and nobody knows where anything is?
No, it sounds like a discount like produce store. They sell beets, apples, and like whatever else they can get.
Oh well, I was thinking it would just be like knockoff stuff, like a bunch of iHomes or something.
Are we gonna get back to the iGriffins and what have you?
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
From last week, remember that show last week?
Yes, I remember that show last week. Oh, it was so long ago though. Thanks for reminding me.
You said something about risking your life with Belkin technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. And speaking of risking your life, there's this movie, and so how do you like that? Was that good?
That was a very succinct transition. Good work.
Yeah, it's just. abruptly ended. So they have some more stuff, and there's this weird scene, like I mentioned, where it's just like, yeah, so any he doesn't know any better. He's related to me, so he gets a total pass. Now, the rest of you, one of you owes me an apology. One guy apologizes, and the other guy apologizes, and he says, ah, I believe you. Thank you for apologizing. And then he says to the other guy, I don't believe you. And the guy keeps apologizing, and he's just like, you know, I think you're a coward. And then he just, like, beats the crap out of him. And nobody can do anything, because bad things will happen if you do anything back. So this old man is just beating up a guy. And then at the end of it, he's like, oh, get back up, you know, you just sort your stuff out and everything will be fine. And he punches him again. And it's just like, okay, so Wesley, super not well adjusted as a human being. And
he's rich and powerful in a small town, so like he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, evidently.
Up to and including killing people.
Murder. Although that does come later, I find the third act to be a bit of a sharp escalation in everything.
You got to raise the stakes.
Yeah, you got to raise the stakes from pool parties and helicopters to murder.
you got to raise those stakes from the Texas Roadhouse. Wait, no, that's back on track again. Sorry, let's go back.
We're going to get sued.
Different stakes mm-hmm. for different folks.
Yeah.
And this is roughly right around the time where we see Patrick Swayze doing like Tai Chi out by the river.
Oh yeah, this is so funny because he's like oiled up with like baby oil. Because
he's very glossy.
Yeah, extremely shiny. And both Emmett stops to look at him, and Wesley, who's like riding around his lawn on an ATV, he, like, stops. And he looks over across the water at him. It's just like, again, Wesley, you're a super creepy old man that is into young dudes. So that's
a
little weird.
There are so many instances of him being super creepy. Like, there's that one, I think it's at night when he's hooking up with the doctor lady, where it's like a shot of, like a profile shot of like the deck outside his front door of Wesley's house. And I'm like, what is this? And then like his rocking chair comes rocking into the edge of frame, and you see him looking, and then he rocks back out and then rocks back in. It's like, what is this? Why are you just sitting on your deck in the dark in a rocking chair watching Patrick Swayze and the lady?
The rocking chair, when that happened, I just couldn't stop laughing.
It added suspense to it, didn't it?
Yeah, because it was just sort of like the creak forward and then the creak back and the creak forward, and then he stops. And then you're like, oh, is it going to stop? And then he's just like, nope, creak back.
You can almost hear him like whispering him to himself under his breath while he's watching them.
And there's like a decanter on a side table, and it's like he really got set up for this. Like, this wasn't just like a one-time thing. He didn't just like grab some Cheez-Its and walk over here. Like, he was setting up for the long haul.
Yeah, there's probably a reason this is framed from the shoulders up.
Yeah, ooh, Dan. Dan.
Anyway, it's not me. It was Brad Wesley.
There's so much shirtless Swayze in this film.
It's impressive. He's in very, very nice physical shape in this movie.
Yeah. I can't imagine he was eating any carbs at all at this point. And what was
just,
really...
it's just black coffee. He lived on just black coffee and Tai Chi.
I imagine he would look worse if he did that. But there's like, when they have their little, like, post-sex scene with him and the doctor... where he goes and sits on his roof bare naked, and then she comes over to join him. Mm-hmm. Also, only covering everything except for her butt, which is strange, Miss Lynch. But they go and sit there and presumably don't roll onto a rusty nail and get tetanus.
He put a rug out there on the roof. Didn't you see that?
Yeah, I know, but a nail can go through a rug, Dan.
Well, it's a roof, so the nails go downward into the shingles.
It's Rochambeau. Roof Chambeau.
Oh, God. I'm sure they were fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they have their little roll in the hay.
roll on the roof?
Roll on the roof above the hay.
As long as they don't fall off the roof, because that would be painful.
That would be also a roll in the hay. So they...
That would be a roll into the hay.
Yes, literally.
Yeah, I thought that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Literal rolling into literal hay.
Yes, definitely not sex. Only hay.
No.
Yeah. So reasons and things. we also establish, for some reason, he goes back to the auto parts store. I don't know why he went back the second time or whatever, and there's just, like, broken stuff everywhere, and it's like,
Red. His windshield.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, Red, what's the matter? And Red's like, oh, you know, just bad things happen to me, I guess, because I'm paying protection money, only sometimes it doesn't work out to protect anything, and things get broken and stuff, and things. It's like, it wasn't really entirely clear to me why they broke his stuff.
Because they could.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, it's entirely legal because it's a neighborhood improvement organization. It is just like, okay. I mean, I think federally, at some level, you can call in somebody for that. But this town doesn't seem to feel very threatened by it. Perhaps it is the sudden and very sharp escalation towards the end of the film that makes them change their minds, since they all seem so complacent.
It's just the way things are, man.
Yeah.
Can't change it. He's rich and powerful. But before we leave this scene where the auto parts store is completely torn up, I want to point out that this is perhaps one of my favorite outfits from the entire 80s, not just this movie, where he's got that, like, white, like, low V-cut sort of, like, karate gi of a shirt.
Oh, it's so funny.
It's the most insane-looking shirt I have ever seen, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone else wear something quite like it, but it is spectacular.
He also wears it later when Sam Elliott wanders into the bar.
I know, I celebrated its return.
Yeah, because I thought that was it was totally appropriate to wear, because it's like, hey, you know what? Everyone's life is in danger, and I just killed somebody. I want to feel special, so I'm going to put this on.
And the other thing about the outfits is, in this movie, Patrick Swayze wears all of the pleats from the 80s. Like, all of the pleats that were ever invented in the 80s are in this movie.
Yeah, and oh my god, there's so much loose clothing, loose billowy clothing.
But very high-waisted, very billowy.
Yeah, the man, the costumes, the wardrobe department, they really did a thing. And so, you know, there's a few more bar scenes and stuff, and I kind of lost track of how many bar scenes total there were, but things were progressively getting better at the bar. People had shirts that were color coordinated and like a uniform, and there were
red shirt,
signs.
Man. Red yeah. shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta wear a red shirt. It's what Swayze does.
Yeah. Well,
that's that note that Clapton Davis takes down in that other movie we talked about.
Oh,
remember he writes that down because he's watching in gym class.
No.
Yeah, he writes down red shirt.
I kind of blocked it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Rye in the chat is shouting Star Trek red shirt.
No, different kind of red shirt.
Yeah, different.
This one buttons up.
Yeah, the other kind just gets you struck by lightning when Val is angry. So
can I say how disappointed I am right now that Google Images is failing to find me that shirt that I'm talking about, the white one?
Okay,
I'm very upset about this.
Do you need to do it right now?
I need to be looking at it. It is so good.
We can't continue the podcast unless you're looking at it?
Nope, we can't continue unless I'm literally looking at that shirt. I ain't get a Double Deuce shirt. Anyway. That's a good name for the bar, right? The Double Deuce?
No. And
not only is it a pile of poo, it's a double pile of poo.
Yeah. Well, and also, when Sam Elliott wanders in, he mistakenly refers to it as something else.
It's actually pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Wait, did he say what I just think he said? Yes, he did.
Oh, Sam Elliott. You bring a certain kind of dignity to the film.
And a very, very wonderful 3-day beard. He doesn't have the mustache in this one. I forgot that he didn't have the mustache.
Yeah, Sam Elliott without a mustache really threw me. Because when I heard his voice, I you know, my ears perked up and I was just like, ah, Sam Elliott. Because he's a very distinctive person, a great actor. Lots yeah. of things, and then you know, he was there.
And he's got the hair, mm-hmm. and he's got that kind of odd limp, which I think is affected. I don't think he actually has a limp.
No, he doesn't.
It's very peculiar.
Yeah, and it was a weird choice. But you know, he's supposed to be like war torn and beaten up from all of his years as a cooler.
Yeah, he's the best around, but he's getting old.
so ridiculous. And they have, of course. They have him show up because he calls and talks to Patrick Swayze, and they're all like, oh, you know, doing things. You ever heard of this guy? No reason. Everything's fine. No problems at all. And then he's like, yeah, totally problems. And so he shows up. This is also interesting because this movie is sort of like a modern take on like a sheriff story of like a sheriff coming into town and cleaning things up. Only
he's a bartender or a bouncer at a bar.
Yeah, which dramatically reduces the importance of his role and his authority and how I should feel about it.
There is institutionalized corruption, and the only way they're going to get rid of it is if an outsider comes in and cleans it all up. So somebody with strong morals who won't take any crap or won't be able to be bought by the bad guy with extra money.
Yeah, and that was Kurt Russell in Tombstone, and it's Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse.
His name is Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
Just Dalton.
Dalton.
That's it. Mm-hmm. We're not sure if that's a first or last name, but that's it. It's just Dalton.
Yeah. That was that app.net guy, right?
Is that what?
App.net.
Oh, right. That guy. Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, same guy. So, not the same person. And so, the thing with the stuff... it shows up, and there's the liquor thing, and they finally found somebody who will get them liquor because that's an emergency. And the thugs are there, and this is where we get, you know, Tiny Ron as Mountain for all of 5 minutes, and you know he's like, "Where's the liquor?" But he doesn't say that. They just start like a couple of them are just like breaking. Like one liquor bottle at a time, and then somebody realizes they can like throw a whole box all at once.
Well, they're not the brightest bad guys around.
No, obviously not. And then they all decide they're gonna take Patrick Swayze, and then Sam Elliott wanders in, and they're like, "You stay out of this, Dad." And then he, you know, breaks Tiny Ron's arm and knees and everything. He's like, "That's gotta hurt."
The one takeaway from this movie, if there is anything for us viewers, is that you know, a commonly known thing to do if you work in a bar as security is just kick people in the side of the knee. Just break their knees all day long and then you win.
Yeah, there's a lot of kicking people in the knees.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying...
I take it back. There are three rich people in this town. There is Brad Wesley, the recycling guy, and the guy who fixes knee ligaments.
Which I guess is not our doctor. She doesn't seem rich. She just drives a Jeep.
No, I think she specializes in more internal injury.
Mm.
But based on those x-rays she was examining earlier, which I think were just like stomachs.
When she's looking at those x-rays, I was like, what is this for exactly?
She's just scrolling through a list of like 30 different x-rays looking at different torsos.
Yeah, and she's got her doctor glasses on. That's how you know she means business.
Yeah, she's on the clock when she's wearing the glasses. Off the clock, glasses come off.
Yeah.
That's not an all in 80s thing.
No. Oh, so silly. But at least, you know, she was a competent, smart doctor. And, you know, she said reasonable things about how he shouldn't get involved in this stuff because he'll just make it worse. And he did. But then it was fine because he murdered more people and then she forgave him. So,
yeah. You
know, she's an interesting character in that she doesn't seem to have any character.
Well, she was not having any of it when he did. And you know, that's the thing that's been haunting him and chasing him, as he moved from place to place is that back in Memphis, he, apparently tore somebody's throat out, which is, fatal, apparently.
Now, did he actually tear the guy's throat out or was that an exaggeration of the fact that he killed the guy?
Well, after the fact that he did it a second time in the movie, I'm going to go ahead and say that that's what he did.
Okay, fine, whatever.
That's, you know, he's got his special three-finger claw grip thing, which
his finishing move?
His throat-ripping grip.
throat-ripping grip?
Yeah.
TM. So the...
To quote again Mr. Clapton Davis, Patrick Swayze didn't get Kelly Lynch without ripping a couple throats.
Mm.
So that's from that movie that you don't like that I like.
You know, I'm not sure you're helping that movie or this movie by bringing that up so often.
Mullet beats ponytail is the other one. It's a good one.
Okay.
You know, if you're ever doing any fan fiction of, you know, Dalton versus Steven Seagal.
Yeah. And, of course, the line, paint don't hurt.
paint don't hurt?
Pain don't hurt.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you said paint.
No, I didn't. But wouldn't that be funny?
No, paint doesn't hurt either. I've had paint on my hands before.
Paintballs hurt. Or so I've been told. I've never gone paintballing.
Paintballs do hurt. I used to do that when we were younger. I got shot in the hand one time. It was not pleasant.
Oh. Is there more to that story?
No, that's about it. I mean, I got shot in the neck, too, and my neck cramped up.
I watched the paintball episode of Daria. Does that count?
Sure, totally counts.
Yeah.
But that is different than the type of paintballs that are in 10 Things I Hate About You. Those are sort of like hand-thrown.
Da-da-da-da, excuse me, da-da-da-da, excuse me. Remember? That was the opening theme. Part of the opening theme.
Of Daria? Daria. You know, that was on the other day. They were doing like a couple episodes in a row, like in the middle of the night, and I watched like 5 minutes of it, and it's just like, it's too much for me right now. And I went to bed.
They were like, hey, we found some beta tapes in the back room.
more like we found a beta tape player, because those are harder to find these days. In my last couple years at Intel, we had probably 700 beta tapes. Like, I boxed them up because we had to get them out of there and put them in the storage room. But we had 7 beta decks, and not a single one of them worked. And just getting them repaired would cost more than, like, buying a new one. So they just, like, let them rot in the corner.
Dan, I am so old that my school demo reel that we had to put together was on beta. They had.
Are you talking about, like, the canonical consumer beta or, like, beta SP?
I think it was beta SP because we had the rack and everything, and we had to convert everything to Targas and use a special accelerated Targa card.
Oh, man. Remember Targa files?
Yeah, because the Targa, it had to serve the Targa files fast enough to the beta recorder so that it would record it onto the thing appropriately.
I mean, that is 8 whole bits of standard definition resolution right there.
Oh, God, that was...
You need some fat pipe, as they called it back in the analog days.
Everybody needs some fat pipe, Dan. Let's be honest.
The guys I work with continually called uncompressed video. Continually mentioned that it required fat pipe.
Oh,
that's when we were upgrading our systems. We needed to make sure we get some fat pipe in there so we can get some uncompressed video.
Did everyone chuckle afterwards every time they did this? Or
you know, it became like a multi-time a day thing, and you just kind of go gray after a while. It's just like, great. I'm just in this world where people are just saying words that don't mean anything.
Okay. Well,
anyway, Roadhouse.
So, movies.
I love how well we can derail ourselves.
Derail ourselves.
It's really a talent. Roadhouse ourselves?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, they have this thing, and then they're like, okay, we've really cleaned up the bar now, and we're really defying him now. And then Red's auto shop, which is directly across the street from the bar, explodes spectacularly. And then Wesley is inside the bar, and he's like, oh, let's get some drinks for the firefighters because they deserve it. You know, and then he's like, hey, horrible person that I came with, you go up there and dance around a little and then take off your clothes because I own this place.
And I couldn't tell if this was intended to be some sort of subplot where we got that brief mention that Brad Wesley had a thing for the doc after Dalton was hooking up with her. And I thought this was like, is he trying to like tempt him away from the doc so he can get back with her or something? Or what's going on here?
I'm not sure exactly what that was. I was reading around to try and find some more information about what I just watched, and there was a...
I think it was a movie. It was more or less a movie, right?
Yeah, more or less. And there was a website called Wide Screenings, Arts Criticism for Those Who Appreciate Landmark Films, comma, again and again, no Oxford comma. And they have a whole thing on Roadhouse and speculating on reasons why he did certain things, and it's like... the homoeroticism is mentioned strongly in here, and they're like, you know, so we think that potentially it was about having the doctor as a trophy and not necessarily so much having the doctor lovingly.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But then what was poofy hair blonde girl all about?
Trophy.
Sure, but like, why was he making her go dance on the stage?
Because he could, and he wanted to show that he owned everyone there.
Sure. Well, I mean,
it was his place, and he ran the joint.
It is fine and all, but you know, if you're gonna have a pet keep it on the leash or whatever. But then, like, the other guy who, the pool cue guy, it's apparently his girlfriend because he beats her up at one point.
That wasn't clear because that's also the guy that he pinches the cheek of at the beginning. It's like, he's so cute. And it's just like,
were any of these people supposed to be Brad Wesley's, like, son? Or is Brad Wesley supposed to be young enough that none of these people are his children?
He's not young. That's,
well, no,
the
actor certainly is not, but no. It seems like they kind of wrote the character to be a younger character, and these are like his cohorts, not necessarily how it appeared.
No, I get the impression that he doesn't want to have kids, but that he's the uncle to that other guy, the bartender guy. So he right. should be old enough to have a full-grown adult kid if he needed one for horrible things.
Sometimes you just need a kid.
Yeah, no.
Not in that way. Your own kid. Jesus.
Okay, I just want to move really, really far away from that.
From Brad Wesley. He's a creepy guy. Just sort of all around creepy guy. He just sits there and kind of slowly, ruefully eats his breakfast while having a meeting with Patrick Swayze. Yeah. Trying to convince him, like, you know, how much would it cost for you to come work at my bar? And, you know.
Yeah, I heard you murdered some guy.
No amount of money is enough to come work for you, let alone the fact that you don't actually have a bar or something.
Nothing about him makes any sense, really. If you start to break it down, you're like, so he gets money from this racketeering thing and, like, you know, his protection scam, and he can sort of influence every small business owner to do exactly what he wants, and he...
Only because he's got this group of, like, six cronies that'll drive a monster truck through your window if you, like, don't pay up.
Yeah, and he somehow has the run of the town because he theoretically, I would suppose, has some sort of influence over the single sheriff.
Well, you know, Mr. Wesley draws a lot of water in this town. You don't draw... Never mind, that's the other one where... That's the same guy, isn't it?
What?
Is the guy who played Brad Wesley, is that Jackie Treehorn?
I don't think so. Is it?
I think it is. I don't know. Yeah, it is. It totally is.
Okay.
See? So he draws a lot of water in a lot of towns.
draws all the water.
He drew it right out of that river.
That's why he lives so close to the river.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe the river's just his water.
He needs that water in order to draw something.
It's like Samson and Delilah. If you just have a California drought and there's no more river, then he's powerless.
I mean, seriously, you control the water, you control the people. Wait, mm-hmm. that's a different one, isn't it?
Yeah, he who controls the spice controls the universe.
Sure. That's mm-hmm.
Water is life.
Water is life. Mm-hmm. It's the spice of life. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing.
Mm-hmm. Fear is the mind killer. Water. So, anyway... things escalate quickly. There's the pool cue fight, and there's more fighting and stuff and meetings and things, and then we get to Ford trucks, monster trucks driving through Ford dealerships to threaten the small business owners who might band together now that Red's place was destroyed. And it seems a little excessive, and the doctor discourages Wesley from, you know, going further, because she happens to be on the scene along with everyone in town. And again, no one seems to be calling on any higher authorities here through this whole film, especially in this part. And Sam Elliott, you know, wisely says, hey, maybe we should not be in this town anymore.
We should get out of here. This is terrible.
Yeah, this is kind of like not really worth it for me since I'm not even getting paid really. Patrick Swayze is of course like boxing with one of those things.
He's doing his training. He's hitting the wood boards. He's climbing the rope. He's hitting the punching bag, and he's training because he never loses. He doesn't give up, and he's not going to let some just, you know, random group of rich people with guns take him down.
Yes.
He's gonna do what he's got to do to clean up the city. And by clean up the city, we mean paint it with blood.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. Paint something. Daria. Yeah,
paint don't hurt.
Yeah. So, things. And like I said, Spiral's completely out of control here. Because now we have the Emmett's place has some sort of like explosive device or something. Because there, I mean, maybe there was like a stockpile of moonshine underneath it, or I don't know why it went up like that, but it blew up.
It's like, if they're doing this at nighttime, like at what point did they stop just trying to like mess with his friends and loved ones and just like go after him? Like, why didn't they just set the barn on fire?
I don't know. It doesn't, I mean, it really does not seem that hard to just outright kill Patrick Swayze. Because, I mean, he's not really, like, packing heat, as they say.
Maybe because that one guy who set Emmett's house on fire was on a dirt bike. He didn't have, like, a lot of room to carry additional TNT or, you know, Molotov cocktails or anything. So he could only blow up one at a time, and the house was closer.
Or a Derringer. So,
you know, the pockets on these pants in the 80s were very tight. So, keeping a pistol in one would probably be a little difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's your priority really, is you go over there.
You know, it's fashion first and then, work second.
Yeah. And he stealthily makes his getaway. Doesn't.
On his incredibly loud dirt bike as he rides down right next to the water.
Yeah. And, Swayze takes him out, and, there's a very long fight. With very dramatic, loud music, and a lot of Foley work.
And some more shirtless Swayze, right?
Yeah, lots of shirtless Swayze.
He's in his sweatpants, his training outfit.
Yes, because he was training. And stuff happens where he winds up killing the guy. And it's like, well, it's in self-defense, only then he kind of loses grip with reality a little, and he's like, you know, sort of staring at his hands covered in blood, and the doctor's like, how could you do this? Like, you're, you know, and she runs off, and then he's like, I'm just going to drag the dead body into the water, and then I'm going to shout across the water, because all of these things make sense. And so he's lost it, and he throws Terry, or whatever his name was, into the stream, and he floats off downriver.
He was trying to get his act together, and Brad made him kill again, and he's not happy about that.
Yeah, well, they, you know, you try to get out and they suck you right back in, and
it's called the undertow, undercurrent
in a river.
You know, maybe.
Okay, I'm not a riverologist.
I mean, if it pulled him back in, sure, that's probably what it was, unless it was like an alligator or something.
Mm-hmm. Ripto. So the everybody has a chance to sleep on this, apparently, because then Patrick Swayze goes, he cleans himself up, and puts on that big billowy shirt that you love so much, and he goes and he sits at the bar, because I don't know why, and then Sam Elliott comes in, he's like, oh, there's three guys, but I got them, and they just said, you know, I was lucky, and then he's, you know, Swayze had this call from Wesley, so he deduces that means that the doctor is the one who's actually threatened.
Yeah, one of those two is going to die, he's going to flip a coin, and he's going to kill one of them.
Yeah, because he's two-faced now, all of a sudden.
Sure.
And so he says, no, Sam Elliott, you're too wounded, so you stay here all by yourself in this big empty bar.
Don't lock the doors.
Yeah, just sit here out in the open. I'm going to go all by myself and rescue the doctor. Which
we definitely shouldn't drive in the same car together, because that would be ill-advised.
No, and I certainly shouldn't keep an eye on you, because I don't want to make sure that you stay alive for any reason.
Well, he's Wade Garrett. He can take care of himself, right? Theoretically.
Except maybe. He's just been beaten up by three different guys and is like barely limping along and fell when he walked in the door.
Yeah, but he won.
Yes, but
I bet now he was wishing like he actually slept more instead of, you know, I'll sleep when I'm dead or whatever he said.
Yeah, well, he's gotten lots of sleep now.
on the bar. Like, you don't sleep on the bar. Come
no,
on,
it's gross.
That's like 21-year-old birthday blackout kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the Swayze goes and makes the rather unconvincing argument of just come with me because I said so. And she's not wooed by this and decides that she would rather just stay with the X-rays and take her chances with Wesley, because she does not think that Wesley would kill her. Lo and behold, next scene, she was correct, because he goes to try to wake up Sam, who's Oh, Sam, you fell asleep on the bar. Wake
up. I said only one drink, buddy, and then we'll get out of town.
Yeah, and rolls him over, and there's a knife and a note, and it was Tails. And there's a little blood drop that goes over his tattoo. That was an important shot. And
it was a rose or something.
Well, it said rose. On
it
the
said
banner.
Rose, and it was a rose, just to make sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't want to have them miscategorized. And so,
sure. I mean, if that was a tulip, the entire moral of the story would be ruined.
Although it would add another layer of nuance to the film. And so he goes off after Wesley now because they killed Wade. They killed this guy. And he doesn't have his loved one because she has decided that she doesn't really want to go hang out with a murderer. And he goes off to take it out on Wesley, and he sends his Mercedes barreling towards Wesley's house. And there's some Bad Boys 2 stuff happening right here, because he wasn't really in the car, and there was a knife that was making it drive.
As noted by, like, the super long lens shot, and then cut to the super wide shot, and then back to the super long lens shot, like, five times, and the fact that you can't see through the windshield, like, yeah, you can tell. It's just going to be something... Hold the pedal down. And turns out, it's the knife that they used to stab Wade.
Yeah, and very importantly, the audience gets the information about who stabbed Wade, because that guy puts it back in his empty knife belt holder.
Which makes you wonder why he was still wearing his little knife holster.
Well, he probably didn't have enough time to take it off. And he was like, you know, maybe he'll, like, I have my name on the bottom and my address, so maybe he'll just, like, you know, put it in a postage envelope thing and then just send it back to me. You know, it has a return address.
Yeah, it's got paid postage. It's got a little sticker on the bottom. It says, just drop this in any mailbox and it'll be returned.
Mm-hmm.
Postage guaranteed or whatever it's called.
That's how knives work. And the post office. That isn't. Please don't do that, anyone.
I can confirm. As a person who used to carry a knife, you can just drop it in the mailbox. No, don't do that.
No. Please don't do that. And so we get the whole mansion storming, and it is so ridiculous. There are some dead people, and Swayze's like Rambo now for some reason.
See, this is the thing I couldn't understand. When they're sneaking around and, like, they notice a couple people who are, like, knocked out, leaning up against walls. Like, they got a little bit of blood under their nose, but you can't tell if they're unconscious or dead. And based on what he does, like, a little further down the line, I'm inclined to say, actually, I still don't know. I don't know if they're dead or not. Like, is he only killing the guys that, like, killed Wade and, like, royally messed with him? Or is he just killing them all because he's got a bloodlust going now?
I have no idea. And
he must have left some alive, right? Because polar bear guy doesn't get killed.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if he necessarily meant to kill him or didn't mean to kill him. He just dropped a bear on him.
I think he probably understood the ramifications of knocking a polar bear over on him.
I don't know. Maybe he misjudged and he thought it would kill him. And it didn't. The polar bear just missed a vital artery.
I think they both misjudged in the assumption that you can't just, like, step out of the way of a falling polar bear.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. This scene... Like, because they do, like, the whole thing of, like, where is he? Oh, no. Ah, the bear's coming towards me. And they cut back and forth, like, four times. It's like, this is either the slowest falling bear and you are the stupidest person for not being able to move to either side. Or somebody
got a
little...
This was 1989, and audiences weren't as sophisticated, and they didn't watch as many movies that, you know, had so many cuts in them. So they had to keep it at a slightly slower pace, so you understood that the bear was not actually alive. It was, in fact, a dead bear in this trophy room, and it was just falling over from being pushed.
I think there are a lot of moments in this film where they miscalculated how much tension was required for something, and... drag things out editorially far longer than they really needed to.
All I know is that when that bear was coming at him and he kept firing all those bullets at the bear and the bear kept coming, I was very concerned for his safety.
Again, step to either side. Just step.
Maybe it was a bear back from the dead that is now bulletproof and is coming for him.
Yeah. And it's a heat-seeking bear. No, it doesn't make any sense. Just move to either side. I mean, whatever.
Which is all the funnier because, like, he just killed the guy who killed Wade and then used that guy as, like, a human shield when the bartender dude from earlier in the movie tried to shoot him. And then he threw the knife and killed the bartender guy. And then after that, he decides, like, I'm just going to push over and pull over on the fat guy.
Yeah, yeah. Tonally, very strange. Also, you brought up something that I have a question about. The shotgun guy who's up on the second floor shoots down at our intrepid hero, and he blocks it the first time with a shield and then pushes the guy out of the way. Then the second time there is a shotgun blast, and then the guy gets the knife thrown implanted into him.
Yeah, I think that was intended to be sort of tighter choreographed, that the gun kind of just goes off when he gets the knife in the belly. But yeah, I saw that too, and I'm like, wait, where did that shot go? Did that go off into the ceiling because he was falling, or did that land on Swayze? Because they cut back to Swayze, and he's just standing there like...
Considering nope. It was a shotgun and it was aimed down, it went down and then sprayed. but it didn't, because...
So he just ruined the coffee table or something.
Well, the coffee table wasn't in that room. Our Wesley ruins the coffee table.
Brad Wesley has a lot of money. I'm sure there's a coffee table in every room. That's a sure sign of wealth.
Yeah, and coffee table books for all of them.
I mean, you can't have a coffee table without a coffee table book. At least one.
Yeah, yeah. It's a law.
It's a sign of class.
Yeah, there certainly aren't any rule breakers in this house. So the the trophy room, which is also a weird affectation, the trophy room, they have Mr. Wesley decide that he's going to go into hand-to-hand combat with Patrick Swayze, which, you know...
He thought it would be exciting, and he already put a bullet in his shoulder, so he's wounded.
Yeah, except my money in that would still have been on Patrick Swayze. So
you mean the guy who just killed like four people and took a bullet in the shoulder and is still going, and you're just some random rich old white guy?
Yeah, and yeah. How you don't really get much physical activity except for rocking in a chair, and that the only times you've ever beaten up anybody, all of your goons have made sure that they don't fight back for you, and that you're mostly just beating up your own goons, so they're not supposed to fight you. So, you know,
he doesn't even do any Tai Chi down by the river. Like, he is not in a position to be fighting.
Yeah. Tai Chi down by the river, eating government cheese. Different SNL skit with Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Patrick Swayze, Chippendales?
Yeah, that was a good one. He also wore some shiny black pants and didn't have a shirt on in that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about. So they have their fight here, and it's weird. And it ends with, because the whole entire time it's just like, I've got a spear now, and it's just like, wait,
what? This is his trophy room. So he's grabbing the spears and throwing them, and he's grabbing other sort of spears and using them as like swords or something.
Yeah, and well, he breaks the spear in half, and then he's like using half a spear. But sort of like to just hit him about the head with. It's not really like, yeah, I don't know.
And at that point, it's basically just like trying to hit somebody with a shovel.
Yeah, and so, of course, Patrick Swayze just knocks him back into the chair. And then Patrick Swayze goes into that weird like claw maneuver where he's got like three fingers extended and curled. And then like he just holds there. And they cut back and forth.
He's going to rip his throat, man.
He's breathing hard, cut back and forth, cut back and forth, cut back and forth, cut back and forth. Keep cutting back and forth. Just keep cutting back and forth. It's just going to keep going. Make sure the music doesn't stop. Just keep that music blaring as loud as possible. And so by the end of this...
It's a suspenseful moment, man. This is when he decides whether or not he's going to lower himself to Brad Wesley's level and actually kill him, or if he's going to be the bigger man and walk away and leave him open to being shot in the back.
Yeah, William Shatner did it better. So he gets up. And
I'm not so sure William Shatner quite had the same level of hair and or glistening skin.
No. Well, glistening, yes. Hair, no.
baby oil or just flop sweat?
Oh, just flop sweat. It was out by the Vasquez Rocks. But so anyway, he gets up and it's like, oh, yeah, so I've got a thing. And, you know, and then the doctor, she showed up there. I don't know why. She was just like, yeah, I'm going to be here now. It just wanders into frame. And she's like, look out. And then Wesley gets shot before he can fire his little Derringer thing. And which is hilarious, because then you're like, where did that shot come from? And then the camera, there's a wide shot, and we see there are two old men with rifles who stealthily entered this building at some point.
Well, all of the various henchmen have been subdued at this point, so the townsfolk have showed up to exact their revenge with their various shotguns.
Yeah, so that's
he takes
great.
One hit to the stomach, and he's still pointing the gun at Patrick Swayze, like he doesn't go to defend himself or anything. Takes another shot to the chest, and again, all of these, like, completely ridiculous blood splatter squibs everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he's nothing but blood squibs by the end of this when he falls backwards butt first into the coffee table and, you know, shatters the glass that's in the middle of it, so his legs are just, like, sticking out either side. Oh, so silly. And it's very unglamorous the way that he meets his final demise. And then you hear
a police siren in the background. It's like the first cop car in the entire movie.
Yeah, this is a good time for them. And so the first cop car starts to pull up, and the small business owners, the Chamber of Commerce here, they round up all of the rifles.
Yeah, Emmett just walks around with his arms out, and they all put their shotguns on his arms, and then he just scampers off to the other room to hide his shotguns.
Yeah, it's just, that's how that works.
We're just going to go hide him in the other room. No big deal. We're not going to leave or anything.
No, because Emmett comes back. We get the polar bear guy, and he's waking up, and he's got his gun, and stuff's going to happen. And then the sheriff comes in. It's like, right this way, sheriff. And there's all this, like, absolute chaos and bedlam and blood and dead people. And the sheriff doesn't even check a pulse. He's just like, oh, dear, how did this happen? Of course, he knew Wesley because he calls him by his first name. The Small Businesses Association there is all like, yeah, we didn't see anything. Yeah, did you see anything? No, nope,
who's
going to
tell me what happened here? I didn't see nothing. Sure, that's a good way for none of you to get arrested, apparently.
Yes, because all you have to do is get a lot of people to murder somebody and then say none of them saw anything. That is how that works.
Them's is the small town politics, as it were.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense at all. Because then we cut from this, immediately from this, to the bar band playing, and then Patrick Swayze and the doctor in some sort of, like, pond.
they're skinny dipping in the dirty river.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even the river. It was like a weird pond inlet thing. I don't know. So they're playing around in the water, and it's just like, oh, LOL, murder.
Everything's good now. They killed the bad guy and most of the henchmen, and then the bar is doing well, and he's going to stick around because he's put his demons to rest, maybe? I don't know. Wade's dead, which is a bummer. Like, his one friend is gone.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe they buried Wade here, and he's like, well, I guess I got to stick around now to make sure nobody defaces your grave. Thankfully, we got a dummy tombstone and a real tombstone.
He's going to walk up. He's going to go hang out in the cemetery and lean his shoulder up against a tree and cross his arms. And if anybody gets in there that's too rowdy and, like, falls over on top of his headstone, he's going to kick him in the head and then, like, grab him by the wrist and smash their head through a headstone.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna cool off that cemetery.
Especially if somebody walks in with a knife tip on their boot that catches a lens flare just right.
Yeah.
Then he'll take care of them.
I mean, this is before they had those actuated ones that they use in spy movies, so he just had that right out there on the front of his shoe.
Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. So the film ends.
I like how they noted that specifically, so when the leg comes at him, he knows how to, like, dodge it and then, like, you know, break his ankle or whatever, but, like, what was his plan to, like, not dodge the foot if there wasn't a knife on it?
Well, what I found so ridiculous about that is with that kind of a weapon, like, you want to hurt somebody and make them, like, sort of fall over and then beat them up and kill them in other ways. You don't necessarily want to high kick them, which is what the guy tried to do.
No. I mean, it's good for show, but just, you know, again, go for the side of the knee, and it's going to be extra effective if you got a knife on it now.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, why are you high kicking him? Like, I don't understand.
Because, you know, maybe he wanted to show off. He got some of those jeans with the stretchy material in the crotch that the Walker Texas Ranger used to sell.
Oh, no, but they didn't have that back then. So Maybe he was just taking like some VHS Jazzercise video courses or something.
He wanted to show off his flexibility.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, you know, I would too. That was impressive. If I could kick that high, I probably would do that from time to time.
Oh, okay.
Need help getting those spices off that top shelf? Let me get that for you.
Need help opening that jar of peanut butter? I got it.
Here, hold this as high as you can. Just go ahead, hold it up. I'll get that for you.
Oh god.
The jar is the lid is stuck on your jar of peanut butter. Let me put my knife tip boot on it. I'll get that right off for you. I'm just saying there are reasons.
None of them are good. So this movie ends abruptly. Murder. Yay.
All is right in the town, man. He's at the town, right, and the bar is doing well, and he's skinny dipping in the river with the doctor lady.
Yeah, except they didn't really resolve anything with the doctor lady, because, like I said, she's very upset about him being a murderer and how he's going to, like, take on, you know, be as threatening as Brad was, which is a weird sort of thing that she was wondering about. But, like, she has all these hang-ups about him and the way that he's behaving. Then, all of a sudden, in the last scene, she just shows up. She's there. She sees Bradley get killed. And she goes along with a murder plot, and then she's like, oh, well, I guess I love you now. And they don't touch on that transition. They don't even have a conversation in that last scene where they're like, yeah, so I came back because I realized that nothing. It's just all of a sudden, boom, well, she's there.
She saw him use his restraint and not kill Brad himself. He was the bigger man. He stepped back. And then, you know, the Chamber of Commerce killed him, which is fine. But Dalton didn't do it.
Okay. So, beware, you know, of small business owners.
He's beware of small business. I too am a small business owner. I don't have any shotguns, though.
You do have a source of rice.
You know what? I think they do use rice in like those non-lethal rounds and shotguns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Shoot rice at bags. People.
Yeah.
Well, rice. Yeah, the bean bags. I mean, what's inside of a bean bag, really? They don't use rice. Beans necessarily, do they?
I don't know. I don't really want to talk about the theoretical non-lethal rounds. We're fine. Let's move on. The movie ended. It's over. I never have to watch it again.
You know, it's. I'm glad I finally saw it all the way through and not on television, because this is something else. This is an R-rated movie from 1989. $17 million budget, grossed 30. It's pretty good for you know, cult classic that's lived on throughout the decades.
Oh yeah, and it was critically panned, so it has gone on to do well in spite of that. And it has many fans, as you pointed out, especially all of those references that I never got in detention.
They even specifically mentioned Roadhouse. He's watching Roadhouse on his laptop.
I don't even remember. I blocked out most of that experience. You know, I hated that. I hated that so much, Dan. I've never been so angry.
You hated it because you didn't understand all the references. Now that you've seen Roadhouse, you can go back and watch it, and you will fully appreciate Detention.
Yeah. No. Because I didn't really especially like Roadhouse. So, yeah.
I got to say, my initial fascination with Roadhouse came a long time ago. I don't know if it was like taped over or if it was the actual copy of it, but I remember when I was younger, I found a copy of the VHS of Roadhouse like in my house. I'm like, what the hell is this? Looking at the cover of it all. And I was confused from then on because, you know, I cannot imagine my parents watching this. But apparently they did, and they owned it on VHS.
Okay.
It's terrifying to think about that.
And it wasn't like taped off of TV. It was an actual like
purchase. No, it was an actual like purchased VHS. Okay. Like I picked it up and it was like Patrick Swayze on the cover of the thing, and it said Roadhouse, and I said, I don't know what this is, and I put it back down.
Okay. Was it the cardboard like cheapo cover, or was
it
one
of those
absolutely puffy...
cardboard sleeve. Come on, okay. Man. It was, you know.
Well, I didn't know if it was
critically panned. They couldn't afford to go with them big fancy like squishy plastic ones that they use for like Disney movies.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to know if it came out of the Swayze vault.
Yeah, him and Mickey Mouse are on the cover there, holding hands.
Yeah, you gotta buy them up whenever they come out of the Swayze vault, because they're collector's items.
They certainly are. Yeah, and yeah. They'll never be released again.
That's how you maintain scarcity.
Sure. Manufactured scarcity.
Mm-hmm. It was Roadhouse. The style at the time.
Yeah, it was. We're done.
hide a place where my letters to you are burning. You had time to think about it for a while. Well, I walked 200 miles, looked me over. It's the end of the chase. Oh man.